Greetings and welcome back to the CBMW Podcast, your weekly download of cutting-edge complementarian commentary and one-stop shop for egalitarians opposition research. I'm Jonathan Swan, your host and executive editor of Icon, a journal for biblical anthropology, and I am joined alongside by Colin Smothers, CBMW's executive director, and Denny Burke, CBMW's president. Now, today we want to talk about a very important and positive development within the Evangelical Theological Society. Now, for those who are not living in the world of evangelical scholarship, the Evangelical Theological Society is a society of evangelical scholars, pastors, professors, and students. It meets annually to discuss ideas, present papers, research, and generally just to further evangelical scholarship in areas of biblical scholarship and theology. Now, Denny, I've just given a short description of what ETS is, but why should anyone care about ETS who's not going and presenting papers?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. what in the world is going on with the Evangelical Theological Society that we would even take an episode to talk about it like this? You described it well, what it is. It's basically a scholarly confab that occurs every year, moves around the country to different cities. But all the guys who are writing the books and teaching at seminaries and teaching at Christian colleges, all the men and women who do that come together and they present papers. They argue with each other. They debate one another. A lot of book ideas are in seed form at the Evangelical Theological Society. It's called the Evangelical Theological Society because it's purportedly evangelical. It's, in other words, it's distinct to be contrasted with the larger, more secular group that's called the Society of Biblical Literature and the American Academy of Religion. Those two groups comprise Bible scholars and theologians that are more liberal and more critical in their orientation, maybe unbelieving, or maybe they're Jewish, or maybe they're Hindu, or whatever. But those other scholars and theologians are in that larger group. The Evangelical Theological Society is comprised of what we would say is theological conservatives. And the distinctives of this society are that they believe in inerrancy and they believe in the Trinity. Those are the only two doctrinal affirmations that we have, but it's kept it fairly conservative over the years, although that identity has been contested from time to time. So the question, though, that you're asking, why does anybody care about this? You know, what do I care? You know, what's your average guy in the pew care about all these Bible nerds meeting together? I don't know what people think about us professors. Maybe they think we have pocket protectors with Bible highlighters in it.
Everybody has tweed on, Denny. Everybody has tweed on.
That's right. And elbow pads.
Right.
But there is a reason why this is important, because these are the people who are writing the books and thinking the thoughts and having the debates. These are the people who are influencing the pastors, because pastors are reading books. They're reading the commentaries. They're reading the theologies. And the pastors are the ones who are communicating God's word to God's people. So there is a kind of a really important— it's not the most important thing in the world, okay? I'm not saying ETS is the most important thing in the world. Your local church ought to be your first team, and I think it's the most important thing. But it would be an oversight to neglect the influence that ETS has on ordinary pastors by way of influence, because so much publishing comes from this group, and your pastors are reading the books and listening to the lectures of the people who come to this meeting. So what happens there very rarely stays there. And I'll just give one example of this. You know, it was in 2014 that I had a debate for the first time about the moral status of same-sex attraction. This was an issue that was very much being contested, but a lot of people weren't talking about it yet. That was way back in 2014. And it was me, it was Owen Strand on one side, Preston Sprinkle, Wesley Hill on the other side. And we had this debate about whether or not same-sex attraction was sinful. That was 2014. 4 years later, you have the Revoice Conference meeting in a PCA church in Missouri. So what I'm saying is that what happens at ETS is reflective of things that tend to trickle down into the churches. And so what happens there, I think, matters.
Yeah, Denny, every year for a number of years now, we've hosted a banquet, a dinner for complementarian scholars and up-and-coming scholars as well, guys who are students and gals who are students. You know, part of that's to encourage and edify those complementarians in our vision for men and women. But what specifically, since we go, we have the banquet, we have a booth, what is CBMW's investment in ETS?
Well, it's really, it traces back to the founding of CBMW to begin with. CBMW exists in large part because of something that happened at an ETS back in 1985. Way back in 1985, the ETS had a national conference like they are, you know, like we do now. It was a lot smaller back then, but the topic for that year was on women in ministry. And there were about five or six plenary speakers. Wayne Grudem was one of those speakers to talk about this very much contested issue of women in ministry. And so Wayne Grudem got there and presented his paper, and he found himself to be the only one of the plenary speakers that held to a what we now call a complementarian view. You know, back then, nobody had coined the word complementarian yet. But what we now hold to be the complementarian view, which is a more traditional view, he was the only one advocating for that. And it troubled him. And so he got together with John Piper and a handful of others, and he said, you know, what's happening on the stage at ETS is not reflective of the broader membership, which tend to be more traditionally minded about these things. So, you know, we need to found an organization which will articulate a set of principles that we can advance and defend and try to persuade people with what our theological position is. You know, up until that time, people just called it the traditional view or whatever. But that's where what happened as a result of that ETS meeting was John Piper, Wayne Grudem, and a handful of others got together and they drew up a statement, which they finalized at a subsequent meeting in Danvers, Massachusetts. And they called it the Danvers Statement. And so that's the touchstone for complementarian conviction that we all look to now, what they wrote and what was finalized actually in 1987. They also announced the formation of a group to advance the vision of the Danvers Statement, and that was the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, which is, you know, what we represent now. So our interest at ETS is very much bound up with the early beginnings of CBMW, which was sort of birthed out of this, of, you know, this vision that Wayne Grudem had after the 1985 annual meeting. And so we've been advancing the complementarian vision ever since then.
Yeah, that's right. So in other words, CBMW was largely birthed out of the association, the conversations that occur at ETS.
That's correct.
Colin,
that's not our only interest, though. I mean, our interest as an organization, of course, we care about what happens at ETS, but we're, you know, our primary focus is trying to influence church and ministries and to provide resources for the Bible's view on manhood and womanhood. And that's what we exist for.
All right. So I want to talk about this recent development that we saw occur at the business meeting of ETS. The board... the leadership board of ETS has released a statement on biblical sexuality that I want to read to you and have you guys respond. The statement reads, human beings are created male and female and are called to affirm biological sex as gender identity in doctrine and practice. Human sexual activity is limited by scripture to marriage, which is exclusively the union of a man and woman. Guys, what are the essential affirmations here in this statement? What does this statement mean for the society? Why is it important?
Largely, this statement is in line with a statement that was released by CBMW back in 2017, the Nashville Statement. And that was back then advocating for the traditional evangelical orthodox position that gender identity is according to biological sex. That is, you can't have a male identify as a woman and a female identify as a man and be congruent with the Bible's teachings on gender and sexuality. That's clearly, you know, outlining the transgender position and then standing against it with the Bible's affirmations that gender identity is biologically determined. So transgenderism, by the statement, is excluded from evangelical orthodoxy. And then additionally, homosexuality, specifically gay marriage, homosexual activity outside the confines of biblical marriage. That includes even heterosexual immorality outside the confines of biblical marriage, and then defines marriage as exclusively the union of a man and woman. So broadly speaking, the LGBT acronym is excluded by this statement. And the reason why that's important is because, as Denny's written on, as I've written on in several places, this has not been a settled question for the Evangelical Theological Society. We have had papers at this society written and read and argued in favor of gay marriage and in favor of transgender identities. We wrote an entire – we dedicated an entire issue of ICON to reviewing the latest biblical equality, the book.
It's Discovering Biblical Equality.
Discovering Biblical Equality. That's right. It's the CBE, so it's the egalitarian counterpart for CBMW. They updated their kind of touchstone book. And in that book, Krista McCurlin, among others, as a member of ETS, arguing in favor of affirming transgender identities. As Denny's reported on, this has been a conversation that's been ongoing for 10 years. So we don't want to overclaim what this statement is doing, but we also don't want to underclaim what it's doing. It's a significant step that the board of ETS, in fact, the statement that Ken Magnuson, the executive director, read, he said that this statement is meant to provide guidance to the society as needed and to serve as protection in the case of legal action against ETS. So as of now, it doesn't necessarily regulate membership, but that is an open question regarding the advisory role now for the board to be able to make decisions regulating membership, regulating the kinds of theological positions that the ETS, the Evangelical Theological Society, is staking out. And it is a huge step in a positive direction.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, the ETS, as I mentioned earlier, it only has two doctrinal affirmations that are required of members. You have to affirm the Trinity, and then you also have to affirm the inerrancy of Scripture. Ray Van Ness famously wrote an article years ago arguing that the ETS's doctrinal statement is like a bikini. It covers some necessary things, but it leaves a whole lot exposed. And I think that he is essentially right about that. I mean, yes, we want to affirm inerrancy. Yes, we want to affirm the Trinity. But there are a lot of other things that we would hold to be essential as evangelicals. And so this has always, in my view, been kind of a weak point for ETS, a vulnerable point for ETS, because you can find people here and there who may be willing to affirm inerrancy, may be willing to affirm the Trinity, but who are otherwise unorthodox in other areas. And so, 10 years ago, I went to a session that was featuring a lot of different speakers, some of whom were affirming. Now, that's not a surprising thing at ETS, okay? This is not your church. This is an academic conference, which means sometimes we will have invited guests who are there, and there will be debates with them, or we'll hear from them and sort of engage their ideas, whatever they are. That's not a big deal to have an invited guest who doesn't agree with the theological framework of most people at ETS. That's not a big deal. What was a big deal 10 years ago is that one of the invited guests was David Gushee, and who would come out as affirming of LGBTQ identities. Another person who was on the same panel was an author named Megan DeFranza, who at the time, during the presentation, it was very clear she was affirming of gay marriage. And when you read her books subsequently, it's clear that that is the position that she came to. But what caught me at the time was that her presentation was she was not listed as a guest speaker on the program. So our program delineates guest speakers from people who are members, and it still listed her as a member at the time. So all I'm saying is, look, people are free to do whatever they want in terms of believe what they want. We can't stop that, but our society has had no real framework to exclude that particular affirmation of LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. This seems to me the first thing that could actually be used in a way to limit those who affirm LGBTQ.
Yeah, if the ETS, the Evangelical Theological Society, is going to remain evangelical, we have to confess some kind of affirmation in this direction. Otherwise, we will end up going the direction of SBL and every other mainline denomination or association. Go ahead.
It's a real tension, though, because it's not, you know, there's been a kind of a resistance to more rigorous doctrinal definition because, I mean, this place is, it's a broad panoply of evangelical theologians. And once you try to define things beyond inerrancy in the Trinity, things start to come apart. You know, there's just a lot of differences that are there. You wish that there could be an evangelical core, but, you know, I led an effort, how many years ago was it? 15 plus years ago, to try to adopt a more robust evangelical statement of faith. And it went down. The membership voted it down. They're just not that interested in having that. They wanted
to be. Was
that
before Denny or after the Evangelical Theological Society had its president convert to Roman Catholicism while he was
right
president
about the same
of BTS?
Yeah, it was right after that. It was right after that.
That shows the need for maybe a more robust theological position. I mean, can you have a Roman Catholic president of the Evangelical Theological Society? I mean, what does evangelical mean at that point? And I think that's the question we're bumping up against is, can you have a membership that is comprised of people who are affirming of transgenderism, of affirming of homosexual activity and even marriage? And I think this is the question that we're going to be facing going forward, because I can list off on my two hands right now members of ETS that I know of right now that could not affirm the sexuality statement as it was passed by the board. And I think that's the open question going forward.
Certainly. Hey guys, before I conclude, I have a more entertaining question to ask you. What is your favorite ETS location? ETS moves around every year. You have basically a year where it's in the east, then it's sort of in the middle of the country, and then the west. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite location?
My favorite location is wherever it's warm. So San Diego, I'm a big fan of San Diego. It's 70 degrees all the time out there. So San Diego is a great location.
I was going to say the same. I mean, how do you top San Diego? It's like paradise no matter what time of year. This was my first time in Boston this past week, and I got to do the Freedom Trail, you know, walk from Boston Commons all the way to Bunker Hill. So really just the genesis, the heart of the American founding and tradition. And my American patriotism was at 110% that week. So I really enjoyed our time in Boston.
It was emanating from you, Colin. No, yeah. Not to be boring, I would say let's have it in San Diego every year. San Diego, you know, somewhere in Texas, San Antonio. We've done San Antonio, Fort Worth. And if we're going to do East Coast, we always do the Northeast. What's wrong with Orlando? Let's go to
Miami. Let's do Miami.
Let's get to Florida. Whoa. Come on.
They do Atlanta. Atlanta is as far south as I can remember.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I can. Boston was great. I loved it there. Got to share a lobster roll with Colin, and it was a beautiful moment, let's say. never had a lobster before. It was awesome. All right. Hey, everybody. Guys, thanks for being a part today, and thank you to our listeners. To find more about the ministry of CBMW, visit cbmw.org.